Well, they made it to Egypt. Now the whole family's there. And some years pass, and we come to the end of Jacob's life. In chapter 48, verse 1, one told Joseph, "Behold, thy father is sick." So, as Jacob has been a big part of the story up to this point, but now we see the final days, it's coming up. And Jacob rehearses to Joseph. Joseph came to him, and Jacob rehearses the blessing of God and the experiences of his life. What would you say were the big things in Jacob's life? Or what do you remember about Jacob? We're coming to the end, so let's kind of remember his life. Anything? Okay, his relationship with Esau, their conflict. Okay, and Laban, yeah. Okay, Jacob's forgiving himself and accepting the forgiveness of others. How many of us have a problem with that? Forgiving ourselves or thinking that people are holding a grudge when they've moved on. And that's usually the case. If you wake up in the morning and think somebody's mad at you, they probably don't have you in mind at all. So just drink your coffee and get on with your day. All right, what else about Jacob? He wrestled with the Lord, the angel of the Lord. And if you go to Jordan, they actually have a place they'll point down into the valley, and they'll say, that's it. That's where he wrestled with the Lord. He did have trouble with women. I'll give you a tip based on Jacob. Before you go to bed on your wedding night, look at her. Make sure she's the one you thought. And Jacob woke up the next morning, he had the wrong bride. And that's a little too late at that point, isn't it? Right. The candles were low. The lamps were low. All right, what else? So he wrestled with the Lord. He tricked his brother out of his birthright. Jacob. Right, so Jacob, right, because Joseph was missing, he thought his son was dead. Can you imagine thinking your son's dead for 22 years? Only to meet him? For them to come and say, hey, he's alive. And not only is he alive, he's the leader of the free world. I mean, he's the one who's holding all the cards right now. And, and Jacob was shocked. After all this mourning, all this grieving, and all this sadness, now he has this hope that his son's alive. Did he believe it? Probably not till he saw him, not till he held him. And, of course, when he saw him, they just embraced and just wept. And it's quite a shock to the system. So Jacob left Israel with how many people coming to Egypt? Okay, 66 plus Joseph and his people equals 70. So 70 Hebrews, and that's where we start. You know, think of all that Jacob had worked for. Now, when he came, he brought everything he had, even though Pharaoh said, tell him not to bring anything. He brings everything he has, which wasn't much. After all that life and all that work and all the manipulation and negotiation and trickery, the idea he had of Esau, when Isaac blessed Esau, he said, you'll be your own man. You won't need what I'm going to leave. My inheritance to you would mean nothing compared to what you can have if you'll work hard and do the right thing. And when Jacob came back, he said, all this is yours, Esau. And Esau said, I don't need your stuff. I got my own. And, you know, because it wasn't handed to him, he had to work for it. So Jacob still had that mindset that Esau's holding a grudge. Well, the last time he saw him, Esau said, I'm going to kill him. In fact, his mom said, he's going to kill you. And when he calms down, I'll send for you. And she didn't. What would that lead you to believe? He still hadn't calmed down. And so that's why Jacob came back with that mindset. But then, so we go through all of that. the blessing on the way, the blessing on the way back. He meets with the Lord. He has the vision, the conversation with God, if you will. And then he goes into Egypt with his family. He's got his family, which, you know, in our lives, our families are what matters, aren't they? We love our people. They're our people. And especially at the end of days, to have those relationships where we are talking to each other and loving each other is so important. And by the way, we don't know when the end of days is. So we've got to work on that and try to keep our people close. And Jacob has that at the end. He calls Joseph to him. He says, look, I'm about to die and I want to bless you. So in verse number 5, now thy two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born to thee in the land of Egypt before I came to thee in Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. So my grandsons, your sons, Joseph, are going to be equal to your brothers. They are part of this inheritance, just like Reuben and Simeon. Verse 7, as for me, when I came from Padan, Rachel died by me in the land of Canaan in the way, when yet there was but a little way to come unto Ephrath. I buried her there in the way of Ephrath. The same is Bethlehem. And as we mentioned earlier in the study, the tomb of Rachel is still a site of tourism and visiting and celebration in Bethlehem. So if you ever make it to Bethlehem, there it is. Verse 8, Israel beheld Joseph's sons and said, who are these? And Joseph said to his father, verse 9, they are my sons whom God hath given me in this place. And he said, bring them, I pray thee, unto me, and I will bless them. Verse 10, now the eyes of Israel were dim for age so that he could not see. Okay, so the same condition his father Isaac had. Now Jacob took advantage of that, didn't he? And he put the hair on his arms and smelled like a goat. And his dad said, oh, smells like Esau, must be Esau. Doesn't sound like Esau, but it smells like him. And so he could not see, so now it's repeating itself again in that light. Verse 13, Joseph took them both, Ephraim in his right hand toward Israel's left hand, Manasseh in his left hand toward Israel's right hand. He brought them near unto him, and Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it upon Ephraim's head. You see that? Who was the younger? And his left hand upon Manasseh's, guiding his hands wittingly. For Manasseh was the firstborn, and he blessed Joseph and said, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day, the angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. Let my name be named on them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand upon the head of Ephraim, it displeased him, and he held up his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. And Joseph said to his father, not so, my father. This is the firstborn. Put thy right hand upon his head. And his father refused and said, I know it. Just like a man, isn't it? I know it, my son, I know it. He shall also become a people, and he shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he. So who's the firstborn in Jacob's family? Esau, right? And Jacob usurped that. And now we see Jacob in the next line passing down that same blessing. By the way, in the firstborn of Israel's children, who ended up being the most successful, most recognizable? Joseph, right? Well, I understand what you're saying. Judah in the future of the tribes and of the land. But here we are, Joseph. Right? Joseph's way down the line. Of his wife, right? Of that mom. So, but of the firstborn of Isaac, He wasn't. But that is a good point. So you see the favor, but Jacob swaps it. Israel, he's called Israel here. He blesses the second born over the first. And it displeased Joseph. See, Joseph, he didn't like that. That's not the way it should be. Verse 20, he blessed them that day, saying, in thee shall Israel bless, saying, God make thee as Ephraim and Manasseh. And he said, Ephraim before Manasseh. And Israel said unto Joseph, behold, I die, but God be with you. God shall be with you and bring you again to the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given to thee one portion above thy brethren. How is that? How did he do that effectively? Instead of having Joseph be the heir, he's now given two sons the inheritance. You see how that works? So it's double. So when all the other siblings get, or all the other brothers get one, but he, by virtue of his children, gets two shares. Jacob called his sons, chapter 49, verse 1, said, gather yourselves together that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days. Now, how many of you read this and thought, I don't believe I would have told that? Right? I mean, you look at the way he talks about his sons. And I don't know what you have in your final documents, your last will and testament, but here he is alive, and the things he says about his sons and the presence of those sons was not complimentary for some of them. Verse 3, Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might, the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, the excellency of power. So far, so good, right? Great. Boy, don't you feel getting your chest big, shoulders back, chin up? Boy, feeling good. Verse 4, unstable as water. Wow, thanks, Dad, in front of everybody. Unstable as water. Thou shalt not excel. And that's pretty discouraging. But it's honest. Because thou wentest up to thy father's bed. So there is a sin that's now cost him. Verse 5, Simeon and Levi are brethren. Instruments of cruelty are in their habitations. If there's anything God's people should not be, it's cruel. It's cruel. I don't know if you've ever had to deal with someone who's cruel, but that's one thing we should not have in our character. Verse 7, cursed be their anger, for it was fierce. Their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Why? Because they were cruel. Because they were vicious and angry, fierce. Yeah. It is ironic, isn't it? And while the, let me see if I can say this the right way. While ministry, we look at ministry of the temple as being, you know, a great thing. In Levi, two things. Number one, they are the servants. You know, we look at the high priest and his clothes, which, by the way, God intended for him to be glorious, right? But the priestly duties, the job of a, even today, of a pastor, the job is to serve. By the way, the same thing with our government, right? We say, oh, look, I remember when Corey was playing basketball, one of the senators for the state of Florida lived there in Orlando, and his son played basketball. And I introduced Corey to, I said, this is Senator Martinez. Of course, Corey's like 8 years old. He's like, so? Who cares? But really, as we look at it and we say, oh, he's a senator. He's a congressman. He's a judge. He's the president. Hey, they work for us. Supposed to, anyhow. That's the design, anyhow. So when we look at the priest and when we look at the pastor, you know, we may think of it as being a glorious, highlighted, high-profile position. They're the servants. So the job of the priest is to do what? Sacrifice. You know, I mean, they worked. It was real work. And so that it wasn't a glorious job, except when you became the high priest. Of course, it was more high profile, but it is a servant's job. Go ahead, Rodney.
Do you think that lesson is because he's so bitter after finding out that 22 years, here's all
this voice
feeding into his wife about his son being killed by wild beasts?
He doesn't say so. He feels like he's been robbed of 20 years with his son. And a tinge of bitterness. But that's not the direction. You know, the direction is, and that's the thing. You know, we look at people and we identify a sin in their life and that becomes the biggest sin. Guys, that's not the only sin they commit. You know, and even in our lives, there's that one thing you think, oh, I just struggle with this. It's not the only sin you got in your life. It's the only one that catches our attention. And so there are things in our lives, and while it is true, there's probably bitterness there. There are other things. He doesn't talk about Joseph. He says, you were cruel. You were fierce in your wrath. Verse 8, and so they were scattered, it says. Verse 8, Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. And Judah is most recognizable for what? The land of Judah. Okay, so of Jerusalem. You know, so he does have that high praise. Verse 10, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come, shall the gathering of the people be. So out of this lineage comes Jesus. Okay, so he's obviously the best. Look at verse 11. Binding his foal unto the vine, and the colt unto the choice vine, he washed his garments in wine, his clothes in the blood of grapes. Jesus. You see that? Jesus, the vine. That redness of the grapes in his clothes. So we see that picture of Jesus. His eyes shall be red with wine, his teeth white with milk. Verse 13, Zebulun shall dwell at the haven of the sea. Issachar, in verse 14, look at what he says in verse 15. He saw that rest was good and the land was pleasant, and bowed his shoulder to bear and became a servant to tribute. So what happened? What's he saying about him? What's that? He was lazy. L-A-Z-Y. My wife spells it all the time around our house. Not when she's talking about me, by the way. He was lazy. He found that rest was good. And he says the land is going to provide. So why work hard? Dan, in verse 16, verse 17, Dan shall be a serpent by the way, an adder in the path. Bite the horse's heel so that the rider shall fall backward. Verse 19, Gad, a troop shall overcome him, but he shall overcome at the last. Verse 20, out of Asher, his bread shall be fat. He shall yield royal dainties. Naphtali is a hind let loose. He giveth goodly words. So he talks about all of his sons, some of it not very complimentary, but this is their blessing. This is, you know, the last thing that your dad says to you. It kind of sticks with you, doesn't it? And so that's what's going to stick with these guys for the rest of their lives, is the impression their father had of them. You know, was it a good impression? You know, was he speaking goodly words, and was that a positive thing, or was he a manipulator? Was he a charlatan? Or was he sincere in those words? Was he unstable as water? Was he cruel? You know, these are the kind of things that's going to stick with them, is their relationship that their dad had with them. But then in verse 22, he says, Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well whose branches run over the wall. The archers have sorely grieved him and shot at him and hated him, but his bow abode in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. So Joseph has had adversity in his life, and yet he rose above it. He overcame it. Verse 25, here's the blessing. Even by the God of thy father, who shall help thee, and by the Almighty, who shall bless thee with the blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lieth under, blessings of the breasts and of the womb, the blessings of thy father have prevailed above the blessings of my progenitors. The utmost bound of the everlasting hills, they shall be on the head of Joseph. So this blessing, him that was separate from his brethren. And then, so that favor, that blessing. Now, who was the favorite after Joseph was missing? Benjamin. You think he was spoiled? Verse 27, Benjamin shall raven as a wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. And so he's a conqueror. He's successful. He's an achiever. And he will be wealthy. He will be blessed. And he blessed them, everyone, according to his blessings. That's the end of verse 28. And he charged them and said in verse 29, I am gathered unto my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought. So his dying wish after he's spilled his heart, poured his heart out to all these sons, he says, take me back and put me in that cave with my father and my grandfather. And that was the promise that he desired of them, and they did. And so they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife. And there I buried Leah. So everybody gets buried. So, and by the way, I mentioned this not long, I don't know, part of this study. You can go there today. It'll be tomorrow before you get there. But it's one of those sites. Remember, who honors and reveres Abraham? Islam and Christianity and the Jews. So the three dominant religions all have rights to that place at the cave of Machpelah. So Abraham, Isaac, Jacob are all buried there with their wives. And the Christians or the Jews have one side, and the Muslims have the other side, and the tombs, they can each come from each side and celebrate, worship, whatever term you want to use. And then one day a year, 1 week a year, maybe 10 days a year, they turn it over, and so it becomes a completely Jewish building or a completely Islamic building. So the Jews vacate it for those days, and for the other time, the Muslims vacated. So it's quite a testimony to how people can cooperate when they find something that's so in common. What's the relationship between Jews and Muslims? Right? But today, in modern history, if the Jews lay down their weapons, they'd be annihilated. If the Muslims laid down their weapons, we'd have peace. That's really what it boils down to. Now, you can say that's judgmental and you cannot like it, but that's the fact. And so here in that place, the only thing that brings peace, and it's never been disrupted, never been disturbed, they shoot and bomb and lob missiles at every holy site in Israel. But never has that one been attacked. Never. Because it is so sacred, because Abraham is there. Anyway, we ought to have a field trip. What do you think? Yeah, that's good. I would love to go if it wasn't a 20-hour flight. By the way, I don't think you can go because Israel is not honoring vaccinations from any other country. If it's not a vaccination from them, I don't think they accept it right now. When Jacob made an end of commanding his sons, verse 33, he gathered up his feet into the bed, yielded up the ghost, and was gathered to his people. And Joseph fell upon his father's face and wept upon him and kissed him. And 40 days were fulfilled for him, verse 3, so are fulfilled the days of those which are embalmed, and the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. So they had him embalmed, they mourned, it was a national day of mourning. 70 days of mourning. Verse 7, Joseph went to Pharaoh, asked him, can I take my father and bury him? And remember, Joseph is second in command. The only place that anybody has more authority in Egypt or the world at that time than Joseph is Pharaoh on the throne. That's what he said. If I'm on the throne, that's the only time I will have more authority. And Joseph went up to bury his father, verse 7, and went up with him all of the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, the elders of the land of Egypt. And so they buried him. Okay? Chapter 50, verse 15. When Joseph's brethren saw that their father was dead, they said, Joseph will peradventure hate us and certainly requite us all the evil which we did unto him. So they still have that guilt. They still carry that fear. And, I mean, you're talking about 40 years. And because Jacob lived 17 years in Egypt. It was 22 years from the time that Joseph left until Jacob got there. So that's 39 years. So here we are, 39, 40 years later. How many of you can even remember a sin that you committed 40 years ago? Right? Hey, I got good news for you. God doesn't. God doesn't. He forgave it. And yet they're still carrying this guilt. Verse 16, they sent a messenger to Joseph saying, thy father did command before he died, saying, so shall you say unto Joseph, forgive, I pray thee now, the trespass of thy brethren and their sin. That's four-year-old mentality. I can tell you why, because I hear that at my house. But mom said, and mom didn't say that. But that's the mentality. Well, dad said, you have to forgive us. They did unto the evil. This is still verse 17. And now we pray thee, forgive the trespass of the servants of God thy father. And it broke Joseph's heart. Joseph was shocked, and he wept. And his brethren also went and fell down before his face, and they said, behold, we be thy servants. Verse 19, Joseph said to them, fear not. Am I in the place of God? As for you, you thought evil against me, but God meant it to good, to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. What does that bring to your mind? Anything? They put Jesus on a cross to destroy him. They executed Jesus on a cross because they hated him. And in their minds, in their way of thinking, it would eliminate this whole movement called Christianity. Wrong. What they meant for evil, God meant for good, because it was by that event, by that occasion, that God extended forgiveness to not only all that would live, but all that had lived. Because the blood of bulls and goats and pigeons didn't save anybody. But all that pointed to Christ. And what they intended for evil, God intended for good. Look at how he says it. to save much people. Well, that's the gospel right there in the book of Genesis. Verse 21, now therefore fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. And then in verse 24 and 25, Joseph says, don't bury me here. Take me back to my land. Don't bury me here. Do you have any questions? Three chapters. Good information. Dramatic. All right, let's take a break.